The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Mother's Day is one of flowers and cards and celebration, but it's also a day that holds many different meanings for women whose paths to motherhood have been anything but straightforward. Well, this morning we're bringing together three women whose experiences reflect some of the many forms that mothering can take in Ireland today. I'm joined by Sandy Casson and Catriona Nick-Wirish, who's founder of Kinship Care Ireland, and Catherine Rossiter, who is on the line. And it's lovely to have you all with us. Thank you very much for being here. Catriona, I might start with you. I know you set up Kinship Care Ireland in 2019, and it's become a sort of a guiding light for people who find themselves in similar situations to the one that you found yourself in. You might just describe to us what happened and how you ended up being involved.
Yeah, I suppose to start, I mean, kinship care is when relatives step in to care for children when their parents can't. And it could also be close friends or neighbours as well that step in. So 12 years ago, on the day that Katie Taylor won her gold medal, we were in France with their own son and daughter in my sister Una's camper. Una was my triplet sister, and she had an amazing sense of adventure. So I asked her, could I borrow the camper? And we headed off to France. And sadly, 2 weeks into our holiday, we got that phone call that every family would dread to hear that Una had died suddenly at home.
And very young.
She was 46. So we were 46. And she was an amazing mum of four girls, my beautiful nieces, then aged 8, 10, 12 and 14. And overnight, our lives changed forever. And we now became what we now know as kinship carers. So we made the journey home from France. And we were aware that we were the girls, as we now know, testamentary guardians. So we were named in her will to take care for the children, because Una was widowed. Her husband, Michal, had died when the children were very young. Mm-hmm. So we landed home, and, you know, over those difficult first couple of years, you know, we had to change our home. We had to move into a bigger home. We had to change our car for a minibus for the eight of us. And you kind of, you know, it was like you're just in the moment, day to day caring and taking on that role. The girls, Aisling, Roisin, Sark and Baby, knew me really well as an auntie, because Una moved to Galway to be close to us for support after her husband Michal died. So it was that kind of moving into that mothering role was instinctive. It's something you do. You mm-hmm. want the best for the children, but it's knowing then that you want them to reach their potential
still,
as well.
You're going from, you know, two yeah. children to six, and you showed me a lovely picture of the whole lot of you together, which is, it's gorgeous. But I look at it and I go, oh my God, it's like a football team. You know, it is life changing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah. And for my husband Seamus and I, you know, you think you're equipped with the skills. I worked in family support. My husband worked in the disability sector as a social worker, and you think you're equipped. But you're not really, and you don't, you know, you meet the challenges as they come. And I think when we realised that there was no help coming, that we were an invisible family type. Do you know, we know foster families and adoptive families. One day I just said, do you know, this we can't be invisible, do you know? And finding the term kinship care was like a light bulb moment, realising that there are other families out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are carers listening today that don't know their kinship carers, their aunties and grannies and older siblings and close family friends that step in when children are very small as babies, when the parents can't care or sadly the parents die. And they step in and they do it out of immense love and knowing that they give these children stability and continuity
but
and connection.
Very, very limited rights and very limited support.
Absolutely.
So that's why
Absolutely,
kinship
yeah.
care came along. And I know you provide great help to people, and so many have contacted you. Over 50 imagined families getting in touch with kinship care this year alone, since January. Catherine, I'll come to you next. You have a different story, so tell us your story.
Hi, Claire. My story is, over the years, myself and my husband Dave talked about fostering. And in 2016, it came up again, and both of us went, right, this is it. We're going to find out more about fostering. So I only knew one foster carer, and she lived in the Midlands. So I gave her a buzz and asked her what she thought. I said we were interested. And she said, yes, definitely go for it. She was with an agency called Fostering First Ireland. So she gave me a phone number to call, and we took it from there. Mm-hmm. So before we did that, though, we sat down with our own three children. Our youngest was 19 at the time. And we asked them what they thought, because you don't foster just as me and my husband, you foster the whole family. Exactly.
And Sandy, just go back to that decision. Like, what was it that made you think, I want to do this?
I'd seen and read, and I knew there were so many children out there desperate for loving homes, not perfect homes, mm-hmm. just a family that could look after them and meet their needs. And that was always in the back of my mind over the years. And because my sister's best friend was fostering the same girl in the Midlands, I sort of had a little bit of knowledge about the background of these children. So it was that. I really felt we'd still a bit more left in us to give. And that's why we went for it.
So tell us then about the boys.
Oh, God. the boys are absolutely brilliant. 9 years in, our two boys, our younger one had medical condition, our older boy's special needs, non-verbal. And when they arrived, we obviously had to go to Temple Street to learn all about their medical needs. We got in touch with the school for the special needs child, and there was a huge amount of organisation to be done within the short period of time before they arrived at our door. And
was the initial plan that you would take one of the boys?
It was. We were approved for one child, and we went out to meet him. And when we went into the house to meet him, there was this other little fella standing beside him. And this little fella had his arms crossed, and he's watching everything, and he's minding everybody. And I remember shaking his hand as well and looking into their eyes. And I thought, look at the two of you. So just my heart, like I just, my gut was screaming at me, like, oh, look at them. And when we were leaving that day, their Tusla social worker said to me, both the boys are coming into care, but they've both got big needs, and we're trying to find foster carers that would take them separately because their needs are quite big.
Yeah.
And I'm not Mother Teresa by no means. And our family is just a regular family. But my gut told me not to separate them. Just keep them together. They need each other. And I said to her, listen, is there any chance that we could take both of them into our home? And my link social worker said to me, she says, listen, you're going to have to go back and get approved for both of them. You can't just take one, two of them now.
Yeah.
So I said, well, listen, if there's any way you can get me approved for both, because I can't separate them.
Were you not scared? You know,
terrified.
Yeah, I can imagine that you would be. I'd be worried if you weren't scared.
I was terrified. Yeah. I really was. But my gut and this instinct was telling me, that was bigger than any fear I had. It was so weird. I'd never had it before. And so I remember leaving their house that day. I couldn't get them out of my mind. And the link social worker went then to committee to try and get me approved for two of them. And in the meantime, we went into Temple Street. We got trained in on the younger boy's needs. All of that happened within that week. And the Friday morning, I was having a coffee with my friend in the kitchen. And the phone rang, and it was Ruth, my link social worker. She says, you've been approved for both the boys.
And that was it.
And I remember this feeling washing over me of, oh my God, can we do it? Have we got the skills to do it? Am I going to be able to meet their needs in the best way possible that they deserve?
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was like, stop, just stop it. You're grand. Everything's going to be fine. And my family were totally on board. My friends were brilliant. And
was it tough in the first couple of years? Was it tough?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, we've had roller coaster moments. Like initially when they arrived in the house for the first couple of weeks, they were so good. I mean, I was like, oh my God, this is sort of weird. And after about 6 weeks, oh my God, speak to the hand, the face ain't listening. The cheek started, the no, I'm not going, everything. And I actually had to put my hand over my mouth and smile, because I thought, they're home, they feel safe. Because no child is that God.
That's a lovely way to look at it, though, that they felt comfortable with you.
Yeah, my children would never have been like that, as good as they are now. I know these are very good kids, but how and ever, they were just brilliant. And we had a lot of ups and downs. We really, really did. But we leaned on supports, and we dragged in supports from wherever we mm-hmm. could. Foster and First Ireland were amazing. They came on board. We'd play therapies, we'd therapists, we'd educational officers. I liaised with the school for both the schools. So I was on, you probably know yourself, if the school's on board and you're all, you know, meeting these children's needs, it really helps.
It helps, yeah. It sounds like you did get all of the supports, but that doesn't take away from the fact that that was not an easy thing to take on.
Oh God, no. It was very tough at times.
Will you stick on your headphones, because I have Catherine Rossiter on the line as well. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, good morning, Claire.
You're very welcome, and you're listening to all of that. So you are a single parent and a full-time carer. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your situation?
Yeah, excuse me, my children were born at 27 weeks on the 18th of August 2013. They're now 12. We actually had a lovely day yesterday. They made their confirmation, which is a very emotional day. I didn't think we'd ever get that far in life. So they were born very premature, 27 weeks. Unfortunately, my daughter suffered life-altering complications within 48 hours of being born, and she is now total care. Her twin brother coped better through the birth, but had a lot of complications. We spent almost 4 months in the NICU unit in Hollis Street and moving between Temple Street. He has done very well. He's a mainstream, but he was diagnosed with autism just a year ago, which was a curveball I wasn't expecting. I thought the delays or the differences in his development were due to the prematurity, you know, a legacy.
Yeah.
So I am a full-time carer. Sadly, my marriage broke down when they were four, so I am very much a full-time carer on my own. I'm unusual because I'm classified as a full-time carer and I'm also a full-time employee. So that might sound contradictory maybe to a lot of people listening today, because when we think of full-time, we think, well, you can't do anything else. But I literally have to manage those two aspects of my life. So are you
still going to all of the appointments and the therapies in Temple Street? You still need to do that for your daughter?
Yeah, she's under five different teams in Temple Street. And then there would be, you know, physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists, psychologists attached to her school in Enable Ireland, Sandymount, which is an amazing school. So, and then her twin brother now has different appointments and different needs because of autism. He is luckily a high functioning child with autism, and I hate using that term. But yeah, it's like I keep a very tight diary. I have to keep track of all the appointments and follow up if an appointment didn't come. So my path to motherhood was it wasn't a straightforward path. I had crippling endometriosis and I didn't realise that until I wanted to have children. So I had three rounds of IVF. A lot of complications along the way, complications during the pregnancy. So I'm a mother that's extremely lucky that my children were born and then that they survived, because those early months and even since, I had no idea whether we'll make it to 7, whether we'll make it to 12 to confirmation. So it's been a very difficult road. And I want to acknowledge people listening today who maybe are going through that. That's a very difficult path.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think it's a really difficult day for people who don't have children and who may have gone down that path and not been successful. So I'm always mindful when we're talking about Mother's Day of those women in particular. So your life then now is a constant juggle, everything run by timetable and a balancing act. Would that be fair?
If you can think of a line of dominoes swinging in the wind, that's my day-to-day life. And if any one of the dominoes fall, then, you know, there's huge repercussions. So if my daughter was to become critically unwell and have to go in by ambulance to Temple Street, which can happen, I have to juggle. I have to think about a brother. I have to think about work. I have to think about all the responsibilities. So there is a huge amount of juggling day-to-day. You just kind of get through each day. I think about each week, getting through the school day, the work days to the weekend, and then looking ahead to the next week. And that's how I manage life and how I pace myself through it. Mm-hmm. But it is continuous juggling. Yeah. And, you know, there's challenges trying to get respite. I'm lucky at the moment we're getting good respite, which helps me to, you know, to get a break, because it's a, you know, your other panelists there will speak about this. The caring role is a huge weight on your shoulder. It's constant responsibility, and you love your children and you love the person you're caring for, but it's a very difficult role.
I think everybody would agree with that it's very, very tough. Katrina, can I come back to you on kinship care, on families who step in? And I know that you have achieved an awful lot since the organisation was set up, what are we, about 7 years ago now? But what more needs to happen? What more are you fighting for?
I suppose when something is unknown and, you know, unseen, it takes a while for it to become part of the everyday speak. So that's why I'm so delighted to be here. But I mean, what needs to change is, you know, kinship carers who are outside the care system are not offered the same supports as foster care, yet they're doing the same role. Mm-hmm. You know, they face the same levels of trauma. They face the same level of financial, financial cost and also the emotional cost. So when I hear Sandra talk about all the supports that she could avail of, and those doors are closed to those that are in formal kinship care. So over the years, in terms of advocacy, you know, a lot of our carers are now advocating for better support. So thankfully, through the Ombudsman for Children, we now do have a policy piece going through the department that was requested by the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child. But I think the biggest thing is the acknowledgement of the role that carers are doing? Do you know that, do you know, and celebration of the work, that the unseen work that many carers do, and not just kinship carers, but those caring for children with disabilities. But I think it just that it's in the everyday that people recognise within their own families, they will see that, you know, a granny cared for, you know, a grandchild, or a sibling stepped in. Michael D was cared for by his aunt. Do you know Barry Keoghan was cared for by his granny? So that the kinship care it should be celebrated and should be supported. And yeah, it's the and supports the, that are
it has a value needed, yeah. To it. Now, Sandy, I want to know your news about your boys, because it's a big moment, isn't it, this
it
month?
It is, very much so. Our two boys have moved into independent living with care package in place. I couldn't believe how it happened so fast in the end, because, you know, they go on a waiting list, obviously, housing and all that. But anyways, they're in there and they're doing really well. A few teething problems. I'm up and down just trying to sort things out, but they're doing really well. And I'm actually super proud of them.
Mm-hmm. And how's both. That been for you, though?
Oh, my God, it's been so strange, to be honest. I'm still very much part of their lives, and they've moved not far from us. So, which is great. I'm delighted. And they'll always have us as a family anyway. And they've got their mom and their auntie. And so, yeah, I'm delighted for them, because it's an amazing opportunity for them.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
And you're going to do it again.
I am.
You're going to foster again.
I am. I'm taking a few months, and then I'm going to, yeah, I am going to again.
Right. Well, we'll have to have you back to tell that story.
Oh, thanks,
when we
Claire.
Get to it. Thank you all for being with us today. It's just been fascinating to talk to you. And happy Mother's Day to all of you, to Sandy, to Katrina, and to Catherine.
The Claire Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.